Welcome back to Frank on Target, your haven from the commercial break jungle. We know those ads can be quite the adventure, but now it's time to return to our own wilderness of politics, controversy, and the great outdoors.
So let's get into a little bit, because I just love this conversation, but we're going to run out of time. Tell us about what was, so this must have been an enormous shock to think, wait a minute, I didn't do anything. If anything, I'm guilty of a misdemeanor, and I'll pay to replace the sign.
Right.
So you end up in this prison with violent criminals. I don't know, sign throwing, violent criminals, murderers. It just doesn't seem that that's right. So they wanted to actually put you in fear of your life for supporting President Trump.
I mean, sadly, I almost think they were hoping something would happen to me.
Yeah, I do too. Tell us what that was like. Tell us a little bit about that.
And I'm in there with murderers, you know, guys that got caught with like 200 keys of coke. It's ran by gangs. There's actually only two federal prisons in the country that hold MS-13, and we were one of them. I was technically in danger on a daily basis. And I made it through. But I mean, from a stress level, I mean, talk about high anxiety. I mean, you have to pay attention to everything at all times, you know, because people were getting stabbed on a daily basis.
Talk to us a little bit about, you and I talked about it, and it's in the book, Trumped Up, about how I kind of looked at what you're telling me about the inside is mirrors what life is like on the outside. There's a hierarchy. There's rich people in prison. There's poor people in prison. People walking around with watches and Nike tennis shoes. What is all that? Tell us about some of that.
I mean, at the end of the day, it's its own economy. And I mean, that goes down to shoes and watches to drugs, you know, and to gambling. And I mean, everything. Anything you can think of, I mean, you could technically get in there.
Was the currency, Jim was saying the currency is stamps?
Yeah, it is. It's mailing stamps.
Connect those dots. I'm not getting
that. You're not getting your mail anymore.
So, like, why it was stamps, I don't have a freaking clue. But, I mean, like, it's just what they use these, and they weren't even, they called them butterflies. Because they weren't the regular, like, they were $1 stamps is what they were. And the way it was set up is they were... 5 stamps was considered a book, and 5 stamps was $3 worth. Obviously, if you bought them off a commissary, you're paying $5 for that. So you would try to buy them within the economy of the prison. Now, that's how you could buy everything. I mean, drugs, food, clothing. I mean, you could spend these stamps on pretty much anything you could think of.
This is so distracting, but I'm trying to visualize MS-13 gang members. Who are they sending letters to? Mommy back home?
They're not used. So the stamps are typically beat up stamps. They're not using. They're literally currency, and that's it.
Okay.
They're not using them for mailing. Like it's not for that. It's literally just what they created as the currency in there.
Sure. Okay. Now, did you, when you first entered prison, did you actually say, okay, I'm going to just cross these off. I've got, you know, one day down, however many, what is that, 1,500 more days to go? I mean, how many more days?
What you don't want to do is you don't want to mark the days off.
Okay.
Because it will turn into like the Jeopardy song playing in the back of your head.
Mm-hmm.
You typically are doing the same thing every single day. So if you can create a routine to an extent, it helps kind of make the time go by a little bit better.
I mean, things in the commissary that I had no idea that you could buy. Alarm clocks, earbuds, sunglasses, Wayfair-type sunglasses.
Yeah.
Calculators, wristwatches.
Well, I mean, like, so yeah, they have Wayfair, like, cheap sunglasses. They also have had... $55 Nike sunglasses.
And then the tablets. Talk about the tablets. Honestly, the system sounds like it's there to make money.
I mean, they definitely make money. So, I mean, commissary alone, they allow you to spend $360 a month. So, and most people spend their limit every month. And if somebody doesn't have money, somebody else will buy their limit. So you can just do 360 by 1,600 inmates. And, I mean, you can figure out the math. It's pretty high.
It's $500,000 a month.
Yeah, so that's just all income for them. Now, the other thing is, so the tablets cost about $130. They put 8 to 10 movies on the tablet every month. Movies cost $5. Now, they have music on the computers that you can download to the tablet. Music is $1.70 a song. So, like, from I had close to 500 songs on my tablet because, I mean, honestly, listening to music helped me do my time easier. You know, but from a money standpoint, I mean, I spent close to $1,000 just on music. Some people less, some people more. But, I mean, again, you can do the math on that. It's just, it's an insane amount of money they're making.
What about alcohol and drugs?
Drugs were coming in, you know, one or two ways. And that was maybe through a drone and maybe through a visit. So the way they would come in through the visit is typically like somebody's family member would bring it in and the inmate would swallow it. And when they got out of their visit, they'd go back and make themselves throw up. Now there's some instances where they couldn't throw up. So guess what? You can guess where it came out of.
All right. Let me ask you a question. How did you finance your commissary? And I'm leading into something. How did you get money?
I did have a lot of Patriot support from the street because there's a bunch of J6 organizations that were out here that were definitely helping us out to an extent. Also, one of my best friends that lives back in D.C., he would help me out a decent amount. Now, I worked in the kitchen. So, again, you know, your economy is these stamps. Well, I would sell food back in my unit and get stamps for it. And I would take these stamps and I would basically sell the stamps and have people put the money on my books.
All right. Now, the reason I asked you that is because I've been putting money on somebody's books.
Yeah.
All right. Now, you want to talk about a criminal enterprise? The prison system in itself is a criminal enterprise. Do you realize that every time somebody put $100 on your books, it cost them 6%? So to put $100, and it's one company that keeps the commissary for all the prison systems. All okay. Right? They charge $106 to put $100 on your book.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. So, also, if you want to call, you need, you know, you have to, what do you call it? You have to have money in the bank to make a phone call, or you can't make your phone call. So, the prison system is as corrupt as all the inmates. All right, it's really stinky. I want to know where the hell that contract is awarded for that commissary, where they charge you 6% for every dollar you put in there.
I mean, that's a good question. What I can tell you is, like, even at the last prison I was at, where I was there the longest, there was a few people being investigated there. Including the warden, but like one of the ladies, she was head of I forget the department, but like they were investigating her because, I mean, I don't know how much she made. She probably made like $80,000 a year, and she lives in this like $5 million house.
Uh oh.
And that was a pretty normal occurrence between some of these people, including the warden. And I mean these people were, it was crazy. Like, they get so much money for recreational stuff, so much money for this, so much money for that. And needless to say, none of this stuff ever gets upgraded. So, like, where's the money going?
But this was a government-run prison, not a privatized prison.
I mean, this was a federal prison. This is federal prison. This wasn't a county jail.
You must have been following the election rather closely, and you had probably as much interest as any American citizen did in having Donald Trump elected. Were you afraid at any point that if one of those cases against him, those lawfare cases, actually derailed his campaign enough to the point where he couldn't campaign, that you might end up rotting in jail for a long time, even longer than yourself?
So was I afraid he was going to lose because of the lawfare against him? No. And I'll tell you why. Because every single time something happened, he bumped up. And I just didn't, I almost saw him as like Teflon Don at that point. And that was not what I was worried about. Now, on the election day, what I was worried about is the same thing that happened in the last election. I was worried about the numbers being, you know, in Trump's favor and then all of a sudden shifting.
Yeah.
So, like, when it was, like, 2 in the morning and I'm watching Fox News throughout my cell door and they finally announce it, I mean, I couldn't even sleep that night.
All right.
Because I knew that one way or another my day was coming sooner than later.
All right. So, Josh, you did more than a year. All right.
I did more than 3 years.
All right, but you're a felon then, right?
No, I'm pardoned, so not.
No, all right. No, that's where I was going. While before your pardon, you would have been considered a felon.
All right. Yeah, correct.
All right.
Correct.
Now that you're pardoned, that felony is gone?
It is, but to my knowledge, like, let's say I got pulled over for a speeding ticket, I'm not a felon by any means. But the arrest will still show.
All right. Now, but your ability to vote has been restored.
Oh, yeah. I just registered as a Republican in the state I'm in.
All right. Well, watch which Republicans you vote for.
Trump pardoned you the day of his inauguration on January 20th. How soon were you released from prison?
I was literally... The guards came to my cell at about 11 o'clock that night, opened my door, and said, "Hey, Pruitt, grab your crap."
Oh, my God. That's amazing. Did you, by the way, just leave the crap behind and just get the hell out?
No. Ironically, so when I found out about the pardon,
yeah,
I didn't know how it was going to go down. So I went ahead and packed my stuff up. So when they came to my door, I had like 2 bags. And I just hopped out of my bunk and threw some clothes on and walked out.
You left your celly some stuff too, right?
Yeah, I left my celly, like the tablet and anything that you could, like food. I left them a whole bunch of stuff. The only things I really took, I took the books and I took all the mail from all the patriots that had reached out to me.
Who was there when you walked out of that jail?
So... The last 5 months, another J6er showed up at that prison. That's the only time that I spent any time with another J6er. And he apparently was believing that we were getting out that day a lot more than I was. And he had somebody waiting in the parking lot.
And they gave you a ride. Where did you go?
So we actually, they were from Kentucky.
Uh-huh.
So we rode down the mountain, down Murder Mountain. And at the bottom, there was a hotel that he had gotten a room for. So we went to the room, first beer I've had in over 3 years, obviously. And we drank a few beers and, you know, got on the internet and, you know, talked to some people on the phone. And then we got up in the morning at around like 7-8 o'clock in the morning. And they actually went out of their way and they drove me all the way to North Carolina.
Oh, my gosh. Wow. Wow.
I mean, it was very surreal. Prison, it's just, if you're getting out in a week from now, like, it sounds good, but it doesn't matter. Because right now, in this moment, you're in prison. So, like, the reality doesn't really hit until you walk out that gate.
I imagine, yeah. What was it like coming, I know that you probably want to protect the privacy of the people where you're at, and I understand that, and I don't want to invade that privacy, but so there was had to have been this feeling of elation, like wow, and then sometimes there's a letdown of, I don't know, maybe it's just the release of all those endorphins that kept you high, suddenly you sort of crash. But was there a feeling, a crash, or what's it like now?
Well, I mean, now I'm kind of like getting back used to being out. I mean, it's been over 45 days, but like initially when I got out, the very first night I got to my sister's house, I slept like a baby. And then after that, I didn't sleep for like 3 weeks.
Well, what kept you awake? Dreams?
Anxiety. Anytime I'd start to kind of doze off, you know, I'd be in a little bit of a daze and I'd think I was still in prison.
Wow.
Well, we actually talked about that, Josh and I did. I think it's in the book that, weirdly enough, in prison, when the door closes at night, there's a protection there.
Yeah.
And even though he's at his sister's house and he's with family, that pseudo protection wasn't there. That feeling of protection, like you're exposed. Is that fair to say, Josh?
Yeah, absolutely, it is.
As far as reconnecting, my understanding is that people reading the book will understand you are a successful person. You've lived an enjoyable life. You made a few mistakes. I don't know a single human being that hasn't. But that you tend to land on your feet and you thrive in the environment where you're at. And I think there was a part about being in Las Vegas and you actually won a lot of money and said, hey, I like Las Vegas, and you stayed for a while. So are you starting to feel that again, that you're getting back to feeling you're Josh and you're... You're able to function in the world. You're getting back your mastery of the world around you.
I would say yes, but what I would say, it's became like very, very recently. Like, I mean, within the last 2 weeks, maybe, you know, that I'm starting to feel like a normal person again.
You come across very strong, very strong. I thought you did in the first interview we did, but here I see that. I hear that in your voice.
I mean, not for nothing. I mean, I don't think prison broke me by any means, but I might have been a little cracked up when I first came out, and I think now I'm getting back to being Josh Pruitt again.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Yeah. It takes a while. If you have an enormous experience like that, that shreds your sense of humanity, your connection to humanity, even your connection to your country and your community, it takes a while to regain your bearings and your identity, to say, no, I am this person. I have rights. I have a voice. I have a right to speak up. I have a right to dissent. I fit in the world. And I imagine that would take you a while. What does your future look like right now? Are you going to go back to Washington, D.C., or?
Absolutely not. I mean, I'm going to have to go back up there and visit my kids whenever that's made possible. But, like, right now, I'm actually getting ready to move to the beach in the next few weeks. I need that kind of I just spent 3 years in hell. I need a little bit of vacation, and I think moving there is a good idea.
What beach are you going to, if it's not too intrusive?
Oh, I don't care. Wilmington.
All right.
Yeah. Sounds good.
If you really want to get in trouble, you can jump the border. You can jump the border from Wilmington and go over to Myrtle Beach.
Yeah, I've only seen it on a map how close it is. I don't know how close it is, but
yeah. Well,
you know, the one thing that I think a lot of people get out of the book, I mean, besides the content part of it, is the honesty part of it. Because I mean, you know, I put some stuff out there about my past that like a lot of people would probably try to hide. And I just didn't care. I wanted to be open.
Well,
yeah, you know, I can talk about the sleep again. I think, Josh, if you remember, I kind of liken it to that movie My Cousin Vinny, when Joe Pesci, who was from New York, came down to, I don't know, Alabama, and he couldn't sleep because it was too quiet. And then he finally got tossed into the clink, and it was loud and screaming, and he finally got his first night of sleep. So it was just the opposite of Josh with that. Like, he's so used to something, and then you go home, and it just a different environment. It just makes you kind of, it changes you. Whether you like it or not, it changes you. But I think, you know, in all those type of things, you grow from it. And I think Josh, his future is going to be amazing, and I can't wait to follow his journey.
Well, it's funny about that, Jim, is like you're talking about like the noise and stuff, and it's like, and this sounds probably crazy, but compared to what you just said, it's about the same thing. So at nighttime, I bought a Bluetooth speaker, you know, to put music on, and I'm not listening to sleep music to fall asleep. I have like freaking heavy metal on, and I'm actually falling asleep to it.
Yeah. I think that's a common experience of people that have been through what you've been through. Do you think that the whole point of overcharging you and doing their best to break you down was to terrorize anybody that would rise up and object to what the administrative state and what the, you know, our corrupt government was doing? And so the fact that you come back and are resilient and on the track to thriving again is the final nail in the coffin of this evil engaged in by Democrats, basically, to create this version involving insurrection and then terrorize anybody to the point where they wouldn't speak up about what really happened, and they would never dare oppose these tyrants that were running our government.
I think it's exactly that. They want to make sure nobody will ever stand up against a tyrannical government, which is exactly what was going on at the time, which is why we feel like we were in the right. And it just, you know, honestly, the best payback is to come back, snap back better, and be more successful than I was before. I mean, that's the biggest slap in the face. I mean, biggest slap in the face is for me to, you know, become successful, open my own bar, you know, and that'll really make them mad.
We need to not screw any other day that we celebrate. We need to celebrate the truth about J6 in a way that our country recognizes we're never doing this again. You know, the way we remember Pearl Harbor, or even better than that, more powerful than that, because this was even more evil, because the evil was generated from our own government. So we need to have a way to memorialize this so that history will characterize it accurately.
Well, because you're right. You're right.
About being about insurrection.
You know, there's a Memorial Day and then there's a Veterans Day. I think we have to look at Josh as having been a political prisoner or a prisoner of war, all right? But I have to say this, and if I didn't say this in this broadcast, I couldn't stand myself. A casualty of that war was Ashley Babbitt.
Absolutely.
All right? So you may have been a prisoner of war, but I'm going to end this because I've run an hour and I need an hour, you know, for a content here. But I'm going to be on the air. I'm going to mute my mic. But in signing off, I just want to dedicate this broadcast to Ashley Babbitt. And you've been listening to WVFF 97.7 LPFM, Red Brick Patriot Radio. And when you do your dedication, I heard your dedication, it was very powerful. I would love to see Ashley Babbitt's name in there. Hey, guys, take care. I'm off. Now, this podcast is going to stay active. And this is WVFF 97.7 LPFM, Red Brick Patriot Radio. And we're out of here.
We here at WVFF thank you for tuning in to Frank on Target, your source for straight talk on global politics and outdoor escapades and controversy. Until next time, stay on target with Frank. You're listening to Veterans for Freedom Radio, 97.7 FM.